And as Prabhuji mentioned, today's topic is called Dedication, Determination, and Devotion. It's in one sense a continuation of yesterday's seminars on Srimad Bhagavatam, because the bulk of the content for today's seminars comes from Srimad Bhagavatam. But we're looking at that content from a very specific perspective, namely this topic of determination. ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्. So we live in this world in fear. We fear a lot of different things. We fear for our health, and we fear death, and we fear a whole variety of different things in life give us fear. And so to address those fears, we have all kinds of different measures, right? Stopgap measures to help us, different kinds of insurance, for example, that help us deal with our fear. So fear of a car accident can be helped by car insurance, and fear of a health problem can be fixed by health insurance, and fear of something damaging our property can be fixed by property insurance. And if you're renting, then you've got renter's insurance, right? And our fear of death can be helped by life insurance. And although it doesn't quite help you live any longer, but at least some of the consequences of your death can be mitigated for those who you love. You can exchange yourself for a lot of money, and hopefully they'll be just happy with that. So anyhow, we have, and these are of course, partially helpful at best. With life insurance, it's quite obvious how meager a replacement for the loss of a person is a bit of money. But other forms of insurance, maybe they do a little bit better. Okay. One of the greatest fears that we have, though, in this world, for which we've got no mode of insurance, and which is a concern to all of us, at whatever stage of life we might be, is a fear of failure. That we might fail in whatever we're doing, or we might not make it, or we might not be good enough. If we're students, we might fail in that we might get an F in the class, or at least not get the grade we want. If we're in a job, we might think, what if I get laid off? Or what if I get fired? Right? I've been made redundant. Thank you. If we're parents, we're afraid that what if I don't train my child properly? Right? What if I don't give him what he needs or what she needs to grow up and be responsible and to be successful? What if the education I give them is inadequate? What if the spiritual life I give them is inadequate? So many different areas of life, and our primary fear in going through these different areas is the fear of failure. What if I don't make it? What if I'm not good enough? And in fact, Srimad Bhagavatam talks very wonderfully about this particular fear, the fear of failure. And in fact, the entire Bhagavatam is stories of different kinds of failure. Failure by devotees, for failures by demigods, failures by non-devotees, failures by demons, everyone. Because the Bhagavatam is a story about human beings, living entities like us, who are trying to achieve Krishna, trying to get to Krishna, or have already made it to Krishna and are engaged in a relationship with him. So because it's a story, and because it's our human nature to be weak and therefore to fail in some way or another, the Bhagavatam, one of the wonderful things about it is it helps us deal with that fear of failure. It helps us ask the question, well, what happens if I were to fail? What would I do in that situation? So There are so many different topics and different areas that one could pull out from Srimad Bhagavatam. But this is one area that I've been giving a little bit of thought to, thinking about in the course of my work and giving various lectures and things on. So I thought I'd share a few thoughts with you about this topic, both the different causes of failure and how to overcome them, and how to ultimately transcend them. And so there's basically, if you study the stories of Bhagavatam, there's four different major kinds of failure that you find within the text, different causes, rather, of failure. And we can find these relevant in our own lives, okay? A major one is desire. Krishna says in Gita, Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhava. Mahashano mahapapma vidhyainam eha vairinam. It is kama, or desire, which is the all-devouring, this lust, all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. Okay, so desire for various things make a person weak, which lead to various kinds of failures. Can anyone give me an example or story from Srimad Bhagavatam in which desire is the primary cause of someone tripping and falling? Anything that comes to mind? Yes, very nice. I can't see who said that. Okay, way in the back. Ajamila, right? He's a wonderful, very clearest example. He's someone who's a very pure person. Good upbringing, good family, good household, good practice, happy marriage, everything. And then one day he goes out and he happens to see a man and woman in embrace, behaving in a very lusty fashion in public. They're not, it's an illicit relationship. And his mind becomes confused, it becomes diverted, he becomes attracted. And finally, despite his better sense, he decides to visit this lady, this prostitute, and from then on, it's a spiral downward for him. Right? He becomes attached to her, he begins living with her, he gives her all kinds of gifts, he has 10 different children from her, and his whole life seems like it's destroyed, it's finished. He gives up his background, everything seems to be gone. But of course, he names his youngest son Narayan, and this says because of his past training. This is one good thing that he did. He decided that his littlest one would be named Narayan. By the time he had Narayan, he was already getting quite old. And so he was the dearest one, the baby of the house. And so he was very attached to him. And at the moment of death, in a panic, he called out his youngest son's name. Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And as soon as Narayan heard this, he came running, but not this Narayan. He couldn't hear. That Narayan, right? The ultimate Narayan, the supreme Narayan, he came and said, oh, you called me. Okay, he didn't come. He sent his messengers, the Vishnuduta, say, this man is calling me, go get him. So the story is very nice. We'll get into it more later. What else? What other forms of fall down based on desire besides the Jamilas? Any other examples come to mind? Bharat Maharaj, right? He had he got attachment, right? Attachment to this deer, and it was a fairly innocent attachment, but he didn't know the limits of the attachment, right? He did something that every devotee should do, namely hurt someone, help someone who's in a position of suffering. This mother deer is jumping across the river. She hears, this mother deer is on the bank of a river taking a drink, and she hears the roar of a lion. She panics and she jumps across. As a result, she has a miscarriage. She's pregnant. The child is born. The mother dies after childbirth. And this little baby is left unprotected. And he takes pity, compassion on him, picks him up, takes care of him, helps him get on his own 4 feet, so to speak. And that should be it. That should be end of the game. Right? He helped someone. But instead, he continues to maintain his attachment. And he gave up this whole attachment of his kingdom and his family and everything, rejected it. It says, Bhagavatam says he left all of this as a person leaves behind a stool after he defecates. Right? That's the amount of detachment he has. Quite a strong analogy. Right? But that's how the Bhagavatam puts it. Just like you have not one bit of attachment after you let go of what's inside. Right? You don't think twice before flushing it. That's the way he left things behind. Right? Not the slightest trace of attachment. And yet, he goes into the forest and he becomes attached again. And unfortunately, this time he doesn't know when to stop, right? When to call. And so he leaves this body, he dies thinking of this deer and comes back as a deer. His story, of course, also has a happy ending, like Ajaman. But we'll finish these stories a little later in the lecture, okay? So Bharat Maharaj is a fine example. Ajamil, one more. Give me one more example. In what way? Oh, yeah. Okay. So Ravan, right? Good example. Ravan was actually a fall down for him. Ravan, he was actually a very good demon. As demons go, he was pretty decent. He was very learned. He knew all the Shastras. He was a descendant of the sage Pulastya. So he was actually come from a very good family also. He was Brahmin by birth. And he was doing all kinds of yajñas. He had done such severe austerities. He knew the philosophy inside out. And he was pursuing the Rakshasa Dharma quite well, right? Okay, Rakshasas have different duties than we do humans. They eat different things and they terrorize and so on. But this is all part of their dharma. This is their job. So in that sense, he wasn't doing anything extraordinarily unusual or sinful, given the fact that he was a Rakshasa. And he was enjoying life in Lanka. He had practically life standard to the heavenly planets. And yet, because of one desire that he had, which was not appropriate, namely the desire to enjoy the goddess of fortune without the Lord, this desire for Sita Devi, he met his end, right? He was killed. Also, there's the story of Lord Shiva. This is less known in Srimad Bhagavatam. But when Mohini Murti, the story of Mohini Murti and the churning of the ocean, and she bewilders the minds of the demons and the demigods and everyone, gives the devas the nectar, the story doesn't end there. Then Lord Shiva, he has this desire. He's sitting with Parvati and he has this desire to see this form of the Lord, as Mohini, because never before has the Lord appeared in the form of a woman. Already, as a man, he's the most beautiful person in this world. So Lord Shiva is thinking, just imagine if my Lord were to come as a woman, just how charming, how beautiful he must be. And in fact, that was the case. He prayed to the Lord, can I see you in this form? And the Lord appeared as Mohini. And he lost it. Right? He lost his senses. He was just, and running behind Mohini, right, to get her. And she's running. And the Lord is taking Lord Shiva for a chase around this universe. While Parvati is sitting there watching, right, this is how his mind was completely bewildered. And he finally, it's all over, right? And Lord Shiva comes to his senses. And he comes back. And to Parvati. And he's not embarrassed, actually. He says, how wonderful is the energy of the Lord that it can bewilder every living entity, even me. Right? Like, in other words, the point is, what do you expect? I should have expected this. You ask to see the Lord in his most bewildering form as Mohini. Her very name is Mohini, right? As someone who bewilders the mind. What can you expect? This is the nature of the Lord. So anyway, a failure due to desire, or fall down because of desire. Then there's fall downs because of transgressions. Okay, so transgression means you cross the line, you make a mistake, you do something that's wrong. As a result of that, you have some kind of a fall down. And there's some very nice examples of people who make mistakes, who do something wrong, and as a result of that, they fall. Give me some examples of that. Daksha, okay. What was his transgression?
He insulted Lord Shiva.
Yeah. He insulted Lord Shiva. In front of Sati, goddess Parvati. And because of that Vaishnava parad, because he insulted Shiva, Lord Shiva, like that, he lost everything, including his own head, and received the head of a goat afterwards. This is the whole story of Sati, and she went to sacrifice, and then she couldn't stand the disrespect that Lord Shiva was receiving, and she was receiving as a result of being his wife. Daksha thought, you know, my daughter deserved much better. She deserved. She's the daughter of one of the progenitors of this world, one of the Prajapatis. Daksha is a very great soul. And yet she married this guy who walks around practically naked, covers himself with ashes from the crematorium, hangs out with the most ugliest of beings, like ghosts and goblins, and he couldn't appreciate Lord Shiva's transcendental pure position, that he's in fact Yogeshwara, he's the lord of all these yogis. He couldn't appreciate it. He just thought, you know, I got cheated. He had to get Sati married to Lord Shiva because of request from his superiors, like Lord Brahma. So he always held this grudge, and in the end he ended up insulting Lord Shiva and had a pretty bad fall down as a result of that. It took him a couple different lifetimes in order to regain his position. Good example. What else? Durvasa Muni and Ambarish Maharaj. That's a very good example. Right? Ambarish Maharaj, it appears first that he's the one who's made the transgression, that he's made the mistake. Because Durvasa Muni shows up with his 10,000 disciples, and Ambarish Maharaj is just getting ready to break his Ekadashi fast. So he's been fasting without water for Ekadashi, which we know some devotees do. But this was an unusual Ekadashi fast, and that was lasted a full year. So on the Dwadashi of the next, so say today's Ekadashi, right? Say it's Uthana Ekadashi or something, Vaikuntha Ekadashi. So you start the fast today, and then the Dwadashi after Vaikuntha Ekadashi, but a year later, was when he was breaking the fast. So the time had come to break the fast, and he was ready to break it. But just before the time came, the proper muhurta to complete Ekadashi, Durvasa Muni showed up. And Durvasa Muni has a knack for showing up at the wrong time, at the completely most inconvenient time possible. We know this from the Mahabharata also, when he comes to see Draupadi in the forest. He shows up at the wrong time. So anyway, he shows up and he's just getting ready, and naturally the guest has come, so he says, "Would you like to have food? Please, I have to feed my guest first." And Durvasa Muni says, "Sure, I'd love to have some food. But let me go take my bath first." And always when he takes the bath that something goes wrong. So he goes to take his bath, and there, it takes too long. The time for breaking the fast is here. And if he doesn't complete his fast at this time, Ambarish Maharaj's whole vow will be useless. It'll be, you have to break Ekadashi at the right muhurta for the fast to bear its full fruit. So what to do? He consults with his advisors, with the sages and devotees and Brahmins who are there. And they say, "Look, why don't you take a little bit of water? Water is neither breaking it nor continuing it. It's in between. So you take a little water." So he takes a sip of water, and just as he takes the sip of water, the Rasa Muni shows up and he goes, "What have you done? You've eaten before a guest in your own home. This is a great offense." He says, "You made the transgression." So he curses him. And he plucks a hair out of his head, throws it onto the ground, and out comes a big demon. Right, what a cool way to kill someone. Pull a hair from your head, throw it onto the ground. Poof! This big demon comes out. And as soon as this demon comes out, what happens? Krishna Sudarshan Chakra is waiting. Right? The Lord has blessed Ambarish Maharaj that he'll always be protected by the Lord Sudarshan Chakra. Right? How's that for an insurance policy? He's always there, okay? And as soon as Sudarshan sees, he says, "Okay, finally some action." And he comes right against this demon, this thing that he had created, slices off its head, and then turned towards the person who caused it, namely Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni is running and running. Uh-oh, big problem. Chakra is there, and he's running and running. Different all around the universe, Durvasa Muni can go anywhere. And he goes to the planet of Indra, and he goes to the planet of all the devas, and he shows up at Lord Brahma's planet and says, "Please help me, do something." And Brahma says, you better stay away. I don't want to get killed too. Go, run. And so he goes to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva says, sorry, can't I help you here? This is Lord Vishnu's weapon. Go to him. So he goes all the way to Vaikuntha. Imagine, he could go to Vaikuntha. And there he falls at Vishnu's feet. And Vishnu says, I can't help you. He said, I didn't start this Sudarshan Chakra. It was because of you. You offended a Vaishnava, a devotee. Go beg forgiveness from the person you offended. Why are you coming to me? And so, he goes all the way down and falls flat at the feet of Maharaj Ambarish and says, please forgive me. And of course, Maharaj Ambarish, he's very humble and compassionate devotee. He says, what are you doing? First, you make me eat before a guest. Now the guest is touching my feet. Right? This is no good. I could go to hell twice. So please get up. No, you're actually so much more advanced. You're a sage, much greater than I am. Don't embarrass me like this. Nothing is, no offense is taken. And so Sudarshan Chakra goes back. So transgressions. Okay, Durvasa Muni, there's a couple more. Durvasa, what was the other one you all mentioned already? Daksha, right. Give me two more quickly. Jai and Vijay, okay? Big one. Jai and Vijay make a mistake. The four Kumaras come to Vaikuntha to see Lord Vishnu, and they stop them. And they say, who are you? Kids aren't allowed here. Right. What's your position? They're just a genuine mistake, actually, Bhagavatam says. They're four little naked children. And they don't know that these are one of the oldest beings in creation, and great sages too. In fact, the Acharyas describe that they were actually correct in stopping them, because they didn't have the qualification to enter Vaikuntha. But anyway, that story we'll do more later. Give me one more example. Yes. Yes, Chitraketu's offense to Lord Shiva and Parvati, and we mentioned this the other day. He was cursed by goddess Parvati because he laughed at Shiva and Parvati. They were engaged in intimate activity. She was seated on his lap in front of all these sages, and he laughed at them. Parvati got very embarrassed, and she got angry and cursed him, and he became Vritrasura in his next life. Good. And one more. One more. This one is important because it's relevant to this month we're celebrating. Nalkuvara and Manigriva. Just one little thing here. We all call him Nalkuver, right? But his name is Nalkuvar. Right? Manigriva and Nalkuvar. Kuvara, not Kuvera. He has no connection. Even though they're sons of Kuvera, but no connection there in the word Nalkuvar. So, these two, they were bathing naked, and they did not cover themselves up properly when Narad Muni came by. They were enjoying with women bathing in this lake, in the celestial world. And when Narad Muni showed up, the ladies, they had some shame, they covered themselves. Nalkuvara and Manigriva, they didn't. They were shameless. They're drunk, literally drunk. And so Narada Muni said, we have to teach them a lesson and curse them to become trees. Trees in the courtyard of Maharaj Nanda. Okay, so desire, transgression. Okay, two causes of failure. But there's more. Human weakness. Right? Now, of course, desire can be regarded as a form of weakness also. And so some of the examples we've given are also examples of weakness. Where a person is just not strong enough to deal with everything that comes their way. And one of the best examples of this is the story of the churning of the milk ocean. In that story, when the demigods and the demons decide that they're going to cooperate to churn the ocean to get Amrit, to get this nectar, that's an incredible task before them. And do you know how many times they fail in the process? Because of weakness? How do they fail first? What's the first thing they have to do to churn the ocean? What do they need? The mountain, a churning rod, right? You know what happens when they pick up the mountain? They can't hold it up. It says it falls on them, crushes their bones. Bhagna deha. Their bodies are broken. It's so heavy and they can't hold it up. So you know what happens? Lord Vishnu comes on the back of Garuda, and he picks it up and flies off and says, okay, I'll take it for you. So, okay, the story goes on. Then, how do they fail next? What the rope? What about the rope? Before that, they fail once more. He brings the mountain. Huh? The mountain keeps sinking. Lord Vishnu brings the mountain there. They put the mountain into the ocean. But in order for the rod to work, the rod has to be sticking out from the milk. It can't be inside the milk. You can't churn like that. There has to be something you can hold on to. And so the mountain keeps sinking, and they don't know what to do. They're completely frustrated. They lose all moral impetus. And so Lord Vishnu comes again, and he comes this form in the form of a turtle. And he goes under, the mountain lifts it up on his back. Okay, problem solved. Next, what happens? How do they fail again? They manage the turning, but you were mentioning the snake. What's the failure with the snake? Yeah, it's emitting fire, fire from a snake means fumes, and it means toxic fumes. And it's spewing all these toxic fumes, and they're getting completely overwhelmed by it, right? It's like drinking Los Angeles pollution. And they can't do it, they can't maintain their stamina, and there's no nectar coming out. Where's the amrit? And they all become exhausted, overheated, you know, the pollution is too much, they become weakened. And what happens? Lord Vishnu shows up again, and he says, okay, forget it, let me do it. And he takes both sides of the rope, and he continues churning. Actually, Bhagavatam says, there are demons and demigods, they're on the sidelines, sitting there going, oh, this is too bad. He says, don't worry, okay, I'll churn. They fail again. What's the next failure in the story? Poison. Right? For all their expectations, what comes out first is this very, very terrible poison. What's it called? Halahala. And it's seeping through the whole creation, oozing everywhere, turning everything, killing everything. Right. And this time, Lord Shiva comes to the rescue. They all go begging to him, please help us. And Lord Shiva drinks all this poison and holds it in his throat, and this way becomes Nilakanta. They fail again. What's the next way they fail in the story? At least the devas. Amrit. The amrit, what happens? Yeah, after all this effort, right, finally Lord Dhanvantari comes out with the pot of amrit, and right under their nose, the demons grab it and run away. Right? What an anticlimax. After all this effort, and whoop, they're gone. And again, Lord Vishnu shows up as Mohini. He charms the demons. He has both of them sit in two lines. They trust him completely. They say, we'll trust you. Whatever you say, we'll do. He says, okay. And he hands out the nectar to all the demigods, and the demons don't get anything. At every step of the story, they fail. And yet, in the end, they're successful. Right? Despite facing failure at every turn, the story is a success. They actually end up drinking amrit. Why? Because in every step, in every moment, they turned towards the Supreme Lord. They sought shelter in the Lord. The Bhagavatam is not surprised by failure. Despite so many stories of fall down and failure, the Bhagavatam just shrugs and says, yeah, that's it. That's human nature. What's new? Right? This is not unusual. This is our nature. We're weak, we're small, we're anu, we're little. And therefore, we are going to trip and fall. We are going to fail. We are going to become weak. That's not what's interesting. In fact, there's not even any way to avoid it. The question is not whether we will fall down, whether we will fail. The question is not whether we will fall down in our spiritual life. The question is just, when it happens, what will you do about it? It's like playing a game, like playing football. The question is not if you're going to get an injury or if you're going to get knocked over. Right? That is the game. Right? It'll happen. We live in a world of, I mean, this is a football field, this material world. Sometimes it feels like you're the ball, right? But we're all getting beat up. That's not the question. The question is, when you get knocked down, right, how are you going to react? Can you get up? Can you ignore the pain and make it through the finish line? That's the question. How do you respond to it? That's the question. Even the greatest and greatest of devotees, practically, you cannot think of an example of a single devotee who's made it through their spiritual life without any kind of slip or fall. You know, if they were truly starting from where we're at. It's impossible. Because if we could, then we would be perfect. And if we were perfect, we would be God. And we're not God. Right? That is what makes us human. This is why we're here in the material world in the first place, is because we fell. We failed. In fact, my Guru Maharaj, he likes to say, we didn't fall down from the spiritual world. We jumped down. It's an important distinction because no one's pushing us and you can't slip. We jumped. Right? We jumped. We have no one to blame but ourselves. We looked down and said, oh, that looks interesting. Let's go. And we jumped. So it was a fall down. That's expected. This is just because we're weak. This is our nature. We're kshara purusha. We're not akshara, like Krishna is, imperishable. He never, or achyuta rather. Now, Krishna's name is achyuta. He's infallible. He never ever falls. He never, the verb chu in Sanskrit means to fall. Achyuta means he who is infallible, who never falls. We are chyuta. Not only can we fall, but we are fallen right now. That's why we're all sitting here, is we're fallen. And the evidence of it is the force of gravity. Right? It keeps us down. We're tied to this earth. Sages like Narada and Durvasa and so on, who are not as fallen, who are not fallen, they can go anywhere in this creation. They're not bound. We're literally tied with ropes to this earth. We're grounded. We're fixed. This is because we're chutta. So Bhagavatam is not surprised by this fact. It doesn't make a big deal of fall downs. This is every story in the Bhagavatam we've listed, and you could continue going and listing all these different stories. They're all stories of fall down. But the question is, in each case, we find a wonderful example, a beautiful example of someone picking up, rising up with full determination, full dignity, and continuing onward and said, no, I have to keep going. Because I'm going to get there. And to pick up and keep moving, that requires determination, dedication, and devotion. Okay? And so that's what we're going to look at, is how it responds. Actually, there's a fourth cause for failure, which I forgot to mention. It's a smaller one, but it's important nevertheless. And this cause is time, the force of time. Give me an example of that. What does it mean that time is a cause for failure? What does that mean? You run out of time, true, also, but what else?
For example, the push came down from the president. So after 8 years, he automatically comes down.
Yeah. So things have their limit in this world. And they also naturally decay over time. Right? Every machine will fail over time. If you don't have a maintenance team, every software system will fail if you don't have someone to deal with the bugs. Things over time, they just decay. This is the nature of the world. It's the law of entropy. It's going to happen. So time is often a cause for failure also. And one of the nicest examples of this in Bhagavatam is the story of Bali Maharaj and Vamanadev. You know, when Vamanadev, he cheats Bali Maharaj of everything by taking three big steps. Bali Maharaj promises him three steps of land. He promises him whatever he wants. And Vamana says, I just want three steps of land. And Bali Maharaj actually laughs at him and says, you're just a little boy. What do you know about this world? Right? Take a little more. You're going to have a family one day. Three steps is not going to be enough. He says, look, if you can't be satisfied with three steps, you can't be satisfied with the whole world. And, yeah, okay. So he's going to take the whole world. He said, I don't need anything more than that. Obviously, you don't need anything more than that, because in three steps, he's going to cover the entire universe, the creation. And that's what he does. He expands into his form as Trivikrama from Vamana, which means dwarf, to Trivikrama. He takes three big steps, covers the entire universe in two. Then the third step, he places on Bali Maharaj's head. And at this point, all the soldiers of Bali Maharaj, they're very upset because they've been cheated. Right? They see that this wasn't a fair fight. And this is not the first time the demons have been cheated, right? What's the first time? Or the time just before this? Yeah, churning of the milk ocean, the Mohini Moon. And that memory is still fresh in their minds. Right? So they're still very angry. And this, he always does this. So they attack Lord Vishnu and the demigods. And when they attack, they're being slaughtered left and right. And you know what Bali Maharaj says to them? He begs them to stop. He says, please, my dear followers, my dear friends, stop. Why? He says, just a little while ago, you had defeated all these demigods. This is how Bali Maharaj had gotten to this position as King of Heaven. They were running left and right. Now those same devas are showing up and they're slaughtering you. He says, please stop. The force of time is no longer in your favor. Time is not in our favor. And therefore the same people who you once killed are now killing you. Nothing has changed. They're not any stronger. You've not changed. But the tide of time has turned. Right? Just like as you're sitting on the bank of the ocean. If the tide is coming in, you can swim as much as you want. Once the tide starts moving out, you may be the best swimmer in the world, but it's a very dangerous situation. Right? That tide will pull you out and pull you under, no matter how hard you try. So the tide of time goes in and out. The time is not right. Wait, we'll come back, and it will come back stronger, and we'll get our rightful claim again. It's a very valuable lesson, even in our own lives, in our own worlds, that sometimes something just doesn't work. It just doesn't happen. We struggle and we struggle and we struggle. And we have to understand that sometimes time is not in our favor, right? Things take time to ripen. A fruit falls from the tree in its own good time. You try to pick it earlier and it's going to be bitter and sour and it's going to be a struggle to pull and pull. But you wait for the right time, it'll come right to you. And Prabhupada explains that this force of time is actually the will of the Supreme Lord. For the demons, it's just an impersonal form of time. For devotees, we understand that time is actually a manifestation of the Paramatma, of the Supersoul. The Supersoul manifests externally in the world as the force of time. And in this way, he's turning this entire creation. So if the Lord doesn't desire, then, okay, it may not happen. And when we go through a phase of life like that, where things are just not going our way, then it's best to hunker down and to prepare. Right? To prepare, to give oneself strength, to do the internal work necessary for the day when the time is right and you can come out victorious, right? To do kind of the internal preparation, just like you look at Srila Prabhupada's life. Until the time was right, for 70 years, it's not like he was waiting, hanging around, confused. He was preparing, he was churning, he was meditating, he was reading, studying, working on his sadhana for that moment when the time was right. And the minute Krishna gave him the ticket on that steamship to come to the West, he was off, ready to go. Right? Time is on my side, and just boom, boom, boom. Means Krishna's desire is there. Things will happen. Okay? So, these four causes, desire, human weakness, time, and mistakes or transgression. And the solution to them? Threefold: dedication, determination, and devotion. And this is Bhagavatam's real concern, is giving us examples of people who displayed these three qualities, these three attributes, and came out victorious in the end, came out successful, because they had this dedication, determination, and devotion. So the first one, dedication. There's a very beautiful verse in 10th canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma is praying to Krishna. He says, Tatte nukampam susamikshamanam bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvag vapurbhir vidadhan namaste jivetayo muktipade sadaya bhak jivetayo muktipade sadaya bhak. He says, a person who tatte nukampam susamikshamanam bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam, who goes through his life accepting what Krishna sends his way, susamikshyamanam, tolerating the good, the bad, the ugly, everything that comes his way, bhunjana, experiencing it, evatma kritam vipakam, all those things that we know we deserve from our prior activities, from our prior karma. Tatenu kampam, all the while expecting the Lord's mercy. That no, in fact, the Lord is very kind, very merciful. And if we go through life with that mood of dedication or service to the Lord, while continuing to accept what comes our way, but not just accepting, doing something also. Hridvag vapurbhir vidadhan namaste. With our heart, with our mind, with our words, offering our obeisances, our respects to the Lord, saying, my dear Lord, I know I deserve so much more, but you're just giving me a little bit. Or if good things come our way, I know I don't actually deserve this, but it's your mercy that's bringing it to me. With that mood. A person who goes through life in that mood, jivetayo mukti padesa dayabhak, liberation for him, going back to Godhead, dayabhak, becomes his rightful claim, becomes his inheritance. At the end of our life, we can actually go to Krishna and say, now, where's my reward? It becomes our rightful claim. It's written in our name. It's in the will, right? It's going to come to us. But we have to be able to be patient and to go through what's meant to come, right? That kind of dedication. You see, what Krishna is looking for in our Krishna consciousness, in our spiritual life, is not, he's not interested in our grand moments of success. Sometimes we think success is what we're after. Certainly in the material world, this is what is a marker of how well we're doing, is what success we get. Krishna is not interested in our success. Suppose our service is to do kirtan, okay, in the temple. Krishna is not interested in the one time we led the best kirtan ever. If our service is to organize programs, Krishna is not interested in the one super terrific program we made. That's not what's going to stick in his mind. If our desire is to cook, it's not the one absolutely terrific feast we made. What Krishna is really interested in is the fact that we're able to do our service consistently through our life. That's what he's interested in. Because the one moment of success we have, okay, great. But at the same token, Krishna's not interested in the moment of failure we have either. Right? That one kirtan we tried to lead, which was a complete flop, Krishna's not upset or interested in that. The one feast we cooked that turned out terrible? The one program to which no one showed up? No. The success or the failure is not what Krishna is interested in. He's interested in consistency, in dedication, in perseverance. That this person has done a seva every single week. Sometimes he's been a success and sometimes a failure, but he's done it. Now that's impressive. Tattenu kampam susamikshamanam bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Jivetayo. One who's able to do this consistently. That's what Krishna is really interested in. Because that's what impresses him. We're all going to get those moments of success. We're all going to get those moments of failure. But consistency, that requires work. That requires work. So, not success, but dedication. Second thing. Determination. The finest example of this is in the churning of the milk ocean. The amount of determination that these demigods they had. That at every step, regardless of the failure they met, they were willing to say, no, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to move ahead. And we know that to get anything in this world, determination is absolutely essential. You can't make it through college without a lot of determination. You can't make it through a job. You can't get to the top of your field without a lot of determination. You can't raise kids without a lot of determination. You can't do anything in this world without determination. The question that often arises, though, is when do you know that you're being determined, and when is it not Krishna's desire? Just like sometimes you can be determined and you think, Krishna's testing me, I just have to keep pushing. And other times, maybe this is not Krishna's desire. Maybe he's telling me a message. Maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this. It's like putting a square into a round hole. This is not supposed to happen like this. So when do you know when Krishna's asking you to push, and when Krishna's trying to send you a message that, pull back, this is not determination, you're being stubborn. Right? There's a difference between determination and being stubborn. Stubborn is a bad quality, determination is a good one. So how do you know? How do you know the difference? Give me some ideas. What's the difference? Okay, can you explain that? Motivation?
It's more centered towards me.
Okay, so if it's more centered in a selfish manner, okay, then it may be stubbornness. But what if we're talking about something we're doing for Krishna? Devotional service. Could it be you're trying to do something, maybe a project or whatever, and it's just not working out? How do you know whether Krishna is just trying to make me even more determined and surrender more? Or maybe he's saying, this is not the right time to do this. Or you've got the wrong project in mind. How do we know the difference? Yes?
You can ask higher authorities like Guru.
Okay? The spiritual master can help in this regard. What else? There's three things. We know this. Okay? Three checks and balances we have. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That you take whatever determination we have and we corroborate it. Hopefully before it's too late, right? It's good to do this even earlier on. But you do it right before you begin. You embark on a new project. You go to these three. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. The spiritual master, to the scriptures, and to the community of devotees in which you live. And you present your idea to them and say, I have this new determination for the Lord. Is this a good idea? Most of the time, they'll say, yeah, it's a great idea. But then we do it again. A little ways into the project, another kind of recalibration, reassessment. Am I still on track? Yeah, it looks like it. Or maybe you need to veer a little bit this way. You're pushing a little too hard in this area. Try this. And again, and again and again. And in this way, we calibrate ourselves properly. And if these three agree, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that this is something that needs to be done, then push, no matter how much pushing is required. Because sometimes Krishna requires a lot of determination, a lot of pushing. Just like if you look at Srila Prabhupada's life. Prabhupada, his determination was to go to the West to preach Krishna consciousness. So he decides, let me start by writing in English. He's in Vrindavan for so many years. He struggles like anything. He takes this rickshaw to Delhi, and then there he's out in the hot sun, and he's selling this for a few paisas each. People are disrespecting him. He's not going anywhere. He tries to start a league of devotees. That doesn't go anywhere. And for years and years and years and years, he's struggling. And someone could come to him and say, you know, maybe this is not really what Krishna wants, right? Try something else. But no, he was determined. I got to do it. So he finally gets a free passage on a steamship, on a cargo ship to America. He shows up to the United States. Oh, finally here. But then, doesn't go anywhere. He's robbed in his first year. Robbed clean. Right? He's threatened with his life, right? Someone tries to stab him. He doesn't know. He says, I step off the ship and I don't know whether to turn left or to turn right. He has no money. He lives in the Bowery, which is at that time it was the drunk house of New York, right? The drug house. And at each one of these stages, someone could have come to him and said, look, cool down. Maybe this is not what Krishna wants. You tried, right? You put in your effort, but it didn't work. So it's not Krishna's desire. But he knew it was Krishna's desire. Why? Because the instruction of his spiritual master, that I want you to do this. And so he understood that no matter what difficulties come by my way, this is Krishna's desire, I have to be determined. This is a case of determination, not of stubbornness. Dhruva Maharaj, another example of great determination. His very name means he who is determined. Dhruva means fixed. Right? In a bad sense, it can mean stubborn. In a good sense, determined. Right? Dhruv, very determined. In fact, Krishna, he's not looking for perfection from us. Right? All he's looking for is determination. So the first thing we said, Krishna's not looking for success. All he's looking for is consistency. Point number two, Krishna's not looking for perfection. All he's looking for is determination. In fact, he says in Bhagavad Gita, right? Apichet suduracharo bhajate mam ananyabhag sadureva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisa. Apichet suduracharo. If someone is my devotee and he makes a mistake, he's not perfect, he makes a mistake, he falls down in some way, not just any mistake, bad behavior, bad mistake is durachara. He's saying sudurachara, makes a horrible mistake, abominable, does something really bad. Sadhureva samantavya. If he's engaged in my bhakti, in my devotional service, bhajate mam ananya bhag, he's still worshipping me with full devotion. Sadhureva samantavya. He should still be regarded as a sadhu, as a saintly person. Why? What's the reason Krishna gives? Right on the right path, but samyag vyavasito hisa. Because his determination is properly fixed, properly directed. That I want to get there. Okay, on the way, he falls and he trips and he hurts himself. It's okay. Sometimes even in the community of very advanced devotees, we see devotees who are very, very advanced. they may trip and fall in some terrible way, very embarrassing way even. Right? But samyak vyavasito hi sa, their intelligence, their determination is fixed. What do parents expect from children? When children are growing up, do they expect perfection? No. If parents expected perfection, then there's no way children could ever learn anything. They could grow up. When a child first learns how to walk, you expect him to be perfect? No. In fact, if he doesn't fall down, you think there's something wrong with him. Right? What's wrong? I was looking forward to this first tentative steps that a baby takes. Right? It's one of the sweetest moments in a parent's life is to see the child first take his steps and then fall. Right? It's so sweet, actually. You look forward to it. Krishna, he doesn't mind our stumbling. Right? He doesn't mind our stumbles. In some way, he even looks forward to it. Because he can come down and help us to get up and pick us up and say, it's okay, keep walking, you can do it. Right? He's father of this creation. He says, Pitam asya jagata mata dhata pitamaha. I am the father of this creation. I am the mother of this whole world. This is his job. He loves doing this. Picking us up and helping us keep moving. He expects us to fall. But he also expects us to get up and start moving again. So when the child falls, the first thing the parents say is, very good, very good. You can do it. Come on, come on. Up again. Come this way. Come, I'm here, right? And in this way, the child learns. So that's what Krishna is saying there. Apichetsu duracharo. Even if you get a bad fall, you scrape your knee and you scrape your elbows, it's okay. Just get up and keep running. That's the point. Keep running. And this is, in fact, what will actually develop devotion, which will actually develop bhakti. Right? These three things are all tightly connected. Because in order to be dedicated, you need to be determined. There's no way you can be dedicated without determination. That perseverance, that consistency we're talking about, it only comes with determination. And determination is the only way we're going to ultimately get devotion or bhakti. This is described in Nectar Devotion. Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya. Right? You engage in Bhajana Kriya consistently, dedicatedly. I'm going at it. Right? Then Anartha Nivritti Syat Tata then Nishtha. Right? Determination. You get it. You're steady. You're fixed. And that determination will then carry us to what's the next step? Ruchi. You'll actually develop some taste, some bhakti will emerge when that determination is there. And that's what Krishna is after, is our devotion. Krishna is not interested in our qualifications. What qualities, what assets, what abilities we have. He's interested in our devotion. Whatever he's given us. For some people, he's given us a lot. Other people, he's given us a little bit. What he's interested in is how we use those qualities in his service. Whether you give... See, what you pull out of your wallet to give Krishna is not what he's interested in. What he's interested in is how much is left in the wallet. Right? That's his main interest. You have 5 and you give Krishna 4. Okay, this person is using his assets for me. You have 1,000,000, you give Krishna 20. Okay, you see? Krishna is not interested in the qualities themselves, but how much we're willing to use them for him. There's a beautiful verse by Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam. It goes like this. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir Edhamana Madapuman Naivarhatya Vidhatum Vai Twamakinchana Gocharam Twamakinchana Gocharam. My dear Lord, Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta and Shri, 4 things in this world make anyone crazy. Good birth means good family, parentage, aristocracy, good heritage. Aishwarya, lots of money, wealth, opulence. Shruta, plenty of learning, lots of knowledge. And Shri, physical beauty. These four assets, they're wonderful things, but they drive a person crazy. Madhapuman, we go nuts with them. We become proud, we forget the Lord, often. People who are intoxicated by Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta and Shri cannot approach you. You're only available to who? Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. Someone Akinchana. Kinchana means something. Kimchana. Kinchan. Something. Akinchan. Nothing. Right? Someone who's completely, Prabhupada translates it, materially exhausted. Done with it. Right? Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, I've had enough. It's all there. We've all been given some of it. Someone's been given more Janma. Someone's been given better Aishwarya. Someone has been a lot of physical beauty. Someone has been given a lot of learning. We all get our different assets in this world. Someone who's exhausted with them and ready to say, now I'm ready to use these for you. That person, my dear Lord, you're easily accessible to. So Krishna is not interested in success. He's interested in our consistency. Krishna is not interested in perfection. He's interested in our determination. Krishna is not interested in our assets. He's interested in our devotion. These three things, together, put together, working as a whole, they can help us progress very quickly, very smoothly on the spiritual path, on the path of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, he says that in fact, it's so effective, this simple point of dedication or of determination, that even if you don't do anything, don't do any special effort in life, but you somehow just keep on at the process of bhakti, of devotional service, in the end you'll get the result. This is the beauty of the process of bhakti. So here we are, and here Krishna is. So we have to get from here to here. Suppose in the course of life, we have a lot of struggle. So we're rather slow. So at the rate at which we're going, we estimate we're probably going to make it just to here, not to here. That's okay. In any process of life, jnana, karma, any other spiritual process, even in the material world, if you make it to here, then you don't get anything. You failed. Just like if I'm working towards a degree, and I drop out in my last semester. In my last semester, I drop out of college. How many degrees will I get? Zero. Nothing. In fact, I had a professor. He was an adjunct professor at Boise State University. He was a philosophy professor. He's teaching us a course called Symbolic Logic. And he was doing his PhD. And one day he came into class and he said, I just had enough. I can't do this PhD anymore. I'm just sick and tired of it. I'm dropping out. And we said, really? He said, how far are you from finishing? He said, well, 6 months. And we said, 6 months? A PhD? I mean, PhD is a lot of work. It takes years. In America, 5 to 6 years. You're 6 months away. He said, you couldn't put a gun to my head, and I still wouldn't do it. I had enough. 6 months away he was. He still didn't get a PhD. That's the nature of the material world. You make it all the way, but you don't make it this much, you don't get anything. But the nature of the process of bhakti is such that even if you make it just this much, you will make it all the way. Neha vikrama nashosti pratyavaya navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Right? Little bit of progress and you're going to get the full result. There's only one condition. What's the condition? Don't give up. You can't start and stop. That doesn't work. If you go at it, if you keep at it, through the course of life, whatever period of life we have left, we keep at it. the result is 100% guaranteed. It's like this. If you stay in college for 4 years, you're guaranteed a degree. Which college is going to give you a degree like that? No one, right? But Krishna does. He guarantees it to us. You stay in this to the end of your life, you're guaranteed. And Prabhupada gives the example, it's like a fruit on a tree. If it just hangs there long enough, it's going to get ripe. It's going to get ripe and juicy and sweet. But it just has to hang in there. I remember once I was with Lokanath Swami in a little place called Alibag. It's off the coast of Bombay. And we had been working on a project together. This was his book on Sanskrit pronunciation. Perhaps you've seen it before. And at the end of this week, it was kind of an intensive period. Every day we were working all day long on this and so on. And at the end of it, it was the last evening, and the moon was out. It was, I don't know if it was full moon, but it was very bright. The moon was out, and this was just on the coast. So the tide would go in and out, and we were walking along the beach under the moonlight, a beautiful scene. And Maharaj was in a very kind mood because the week was over and so on. He said, Radhikarman, is there anything you want to ask or whatever? And I said, well, Maharaj, I'm just getting started in my spiritual life. You have so much experience and you're so advanced in your spiritual practice. If there's one piece of advice you could give me, just one thing, what would it be? And Maharaj said, have you ever been to Kumbh Mela? And I said, no, I haven't. He said, well, if you're in Kumbh Mela, he said, the number of people there just before the main snan, the main bath, is so many people packed into a tiny space. He said, you're practically crushed like this, squeezed tight. When the moment for the snan arrives, even if you don't want to go to take a bath in the Ganga, right, the nature of the crowd is so tight that you will literally be picked up and carried and dropped into the Ganga. Right? Even say you panic at the last minute, you decide, I can't go through with this, forget it, what if something happens? You can't. Just by virtue of the fact that you're in the middle of that crowd, you will be lifted up, whether you move your feet or not, and boom, you'll be dropped into the middle of the Ganga. You'll get the snan. It'll happen. He said, this is the way spiritual life is. Just keep yourself in the middle of devotees. Right? Keep yourself engaged in the process. As Prabhupada often said in his letters, keep yourself packed up tightly in Krishna consciousness. It's such a nice phrase. Keep yourself packed up tightly. And then even if something happens in life, right, we all go through phases in our spiritual life. Sometimes we're a little very determined, fired up. And other times we go through a stage in life, if it hasn't happened already, it will at some point, where kind of it's like, I'll go to the temple, I'll do my seva, I was told to. And you kind of lose your oomph. But it's okay. The point is, just somehow do it. Just do it somehow, right? Close your eyes, tie your hands, whatever you have to do, just do it. Because if you get over that period, it'll change. You'll get your enthusiasm back. If you can just get through the thick and thin somehow and do what's required of us, our minimum sadhana, the promise we make to our spiritual master, just do it. Some days you'll feel enthusiastic, other days you'll feel down. It doesn't matter. At the end, mukti pade sadaya bhak. Going back to Godhead will become our rightful claim. It'll become our inheritance. We will get it. We can stand in front of Gornitai, in front of Shishi Sita Ramakrishna Hanuman, and say, now where is it? Right? I've done it. I've been through my life, and where is it? And Krishna will say, it's okay. Come back. Right? You only made it 25%. I'll cover the rest 75%. I'll cover the rest. So actually, Krishna consciousness, therefore Prabhupada said, is very simple and sublime. Right? That's the only thing that's required in devotional service. It's the only thing. Is that perseverance. Whether you call it determination, or you call it dedication, or you call it devotion, or you call it consistency, or you call it perseverance, that's the only thing that's required. Just keep at it. And then we'll get there one day. It'll happen. So I'm going to pause there. If there's any questions or any areas you'd like elaboration, then we'd be happy to take that.
Yeah, I got that the thing that's required is perseverance, but I was still trying so much to tease apart the distinction you were making between tease apart dedication and
stubbornness.
Determination.
No, dedication and determination.
Yeah.
You see, in essence, these three things, dedication, determination, devotion, are all different sides of the same thing. Okay? It's the same thing. These three different names just basically refer to kind of three different aspects of it, of that different quality, you know? Because in terms of a contrast with a desire for success, or one in contrast with a desire for good qualities, or assets in spiritual life, and one in contrast to being perfect. Right? So these things are all kind of different aspects of the same.
Well, the dedication product was to contrast the aspiration for like success. Right?
Yes.
But determination, that's contrasting
with perfection, with not ever failing, right? With not ever stumbling. That sometimes we have this desire that I'm going to get through this without any problems. Right? Like my spiritual life is perfect. I've never slipped. I'm going pretty well. See, that person did something wrong. That attitude is not right. Because it's going to happen to us one of these days also. Okay, maybe some people more, some people a little less. Some people with Krishna's mercy might scrape by also. But that perfection is not what Krishna is looking for. He's not expecting perfection from us. He's just expecting determination.
And devotion, would you make that more synonymous with affection?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. Yeah. Different terms for the same idea, basically. Right? But if you put it on that spectrum, perhaps using Sanskrit terms, then the idea is bhajana kriya, nishtha, and then ruchi or asakti. Right? That's kind of the spectrum of things. That by engaging in bhajana kriya, namely dedication, it's going to lead to cleaning of the heart, anartham nirvritti. This is going to lead to actual determination, nishtha. Right? To get determination in devotional service is actually a great gift from Krishna. It doesn't come easily. Just to be determined, it's actually you need the Lord's mercy. And to get that level of nishtha, it requires a lot of effort, a lot of work. Right? So it'll lead to determination. Then that'll lead to true feeling for the Lord, some real taste, ruchi or asakti. So that's kind of the idea. Yes, bro.
Could you mention about this stubbornness and determination, the example of Srila Prabhupada.
Mm.
So in our day-to-day life also, like say, we try to do our work and we do with determination. How to draw the line, okay, is it, even though I determined, I'm not getting it, is it because Krishna doesn't want us to get it, or is it because of my lack of determination?
Right. Yeah, by getting good advice. Okay, by getting good advice. The only way we can learn how to distinguish those is by getting advice from others who know our situation and can help us to distinguish between the two, because it's a very fine line. Right? So this is why I mentioned this idea of guru, sadhu, and shastra. And that point of sadhu is very important. This is why devotional service can only be practiced in a community of devotees. It's not that it's nice to have devotee association. No, it's impossible to do it outside a devotee association. You cannot practice bhakti. Bhakti is, in essence, a communal process. The verbal root bhaj in Sanskrit means to share. The literal meaning is to share. Right? So you share your heart with Krishna means you worship him. But it's also a process of sharing horizontally, not just vertically. So bhakti means it has to be done in community. And Krishna defines it like that in Gita. He says, how does it go? Katayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha bodhayanta parasparam. Saying these people are enlightening one another about me and they're taking pleasure in glorifying me in a community. So he doesn't define jnana like that. He never says the jnanis sit around and talk. He doesn't say that. He doesn't even define karmis like that. But he defines bhakti like that. Bodhayanta parasparam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Each other, it's mutual, it's a mutual process. This is why that sadhu sangha is essential. Guru's advice, we go to him in the big matters, usually. Okay, some major decisions. I want to enter another ashram in life. I want to become a grihastha now. Or, you know, I'm contemplating a major move. I want to go someplace else. But there's different pros and cons to it. Is this a good choice or not? Larger decisions of life, we go. Okay. But in terms of the details, we need the association of devotees, especially those who are our seniors, that we can get advice from them and say, do you think this is the right process? I've been struggling with this for now 6 months, nothing's coming from it, what do you think? And sometimes it needs determination, but it also needs a little bit of adjustment. Right? Determination is not like banging your head against a brick wall, that's not the idea. Right? Krishna, Prabhupada defines enthusiasm, in fact, in Nectar of Instruction, as action, devotional service executed with intelligence. Right? Work done with intelligence and Krishna consciousness, he says, is enthusiasm. So we need to work, but it's not mindless work. It's not, you know, just banging your head doesn't work. No, it needs some intelligence. And sometimes devotees can help us with that. You know, okay, this determination is good. Your determination is properly situated. But maybe you're striking here. Try this way a little bit. Ah, okay, here's the way. Because we might not see it. It's so close to us, we don't see it sometimes. So sometimes you need to take a step back. And we are unable to take that step back because we're in the situation. So it helps to talk to someone who's standing next to us, who is a little bit farther out from the situation. They say, look, have you tried that out? And does that? Oh, okay. And then it works. So spiritual life is constantly a process like that. It's just like when you're driving, when you're a ship on the sea, the ship decides on a particular course and says, I need to get there. So the pilot or the captain points it in one direction and says, let's go that way. Then what happens over time? As he moves in that direction, what happens? It starts to drift. Right? The tides, the currents, the wind, etc. So he checks again and corrects. Again, it starts to drift over time. And again, he corrects. Right? That's the way it is with our spiritual life. Over time, it's natural. We're going to start drifting. So we talk to others. We get advice, a good team of advisors. We correct. But Ashraya Dharma Shastra says one should ask 6 Brahmins for advice. And if they 6 agree, then you know it's Krishna's desire. Right? You can do it. My Guru Maharaj is very fond of using this policy procedure. He says, in his experience, it always works. If there's something wrong with the process, or not wrong, but there's something you need to be warned about or careful, at least one of the 6 will point it out. Right? Krishna has given us, none of us have, we're omniscient, but Krishna has given us enough intelligence when that intelligence is in the mode of goodness. Right? There's enough intelligence that you put 6 people in the mode of goodness together, and they can look at a situation with sanity. And they'll be able to point out any difficulties, flaws, possible problems, as well as give you an overall assessment of what's going on. Yes, Prue.
Right. You have to, you're not going to go back to God. Next time you start from Nishtha, right? And maybe you finish the stage of Nishtha, you know, and then if you don't make any further progress, then the next life it will be Ruchi, right? It's not like that all of a sudden you are going to.
Well, it's possible you may have to come back in your next life to. It's possible you may have to come back in your next life to continue where you left off. It's also possible that in the last year of your life this time around, you might make very fast progress. We know from the example of many wonderful devotees who led apparently pretty ordinary lives, but always in devotional service, that in their final years, Krishna gives them extraordinary mercy. And they progress to such amazing heights of bhakti. Right? So we don't know what's lying in store. And this is where the aspect of shraddha or faith comes in. Right? We don't know what's lying in store. Perhaps in our first 30 years of devotional service, our progress is one step every 10 years. Right? But in the last 2 years, we might make quick progress in, you know, five steps in 1 year. You see? We have to keep trying to progress. It's not like we can just leave it up to Krishna and say whatever. But the point is, we don't know how it's going to work out, right? And that's the point. That's where the faith comes in. That we have to have that faith that yes, Krishna is going to carry me through to the end. And even if we do have to come back another life, it's not a big deal. Right? Krishna says, it's okay. Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Prashto Vijayate. He says, it's okay. Again, you're going to come into a good family. You're going to get that opportunity again. You'll take that opportunity and you'll achieve perfection. A person who engages in devotional service is never lost, Krishna says. He never perishes. So it's not like if we engage in bhakti, we're going to come back in our next life and all of a sudden we'll go fall back down into Maya and then we'll end up as dogs again. That's not going to happen. Krishna will never let us go. Once we embark on the process with determination, he will not let us go. Even Bharat Maharaj, when he became a deer, Krishna gave him the privilege of remembering his previous life so that he could maintain his determination. So in other words, Krishna will allow us at least that much. He'll allow us the opportunity to progress, and he'll make sure that we do that to some extent or another. Yes, yes. Well, if you engage in Vaishnava Parad, then you will give up the process of bhakti, right? And that's the whole point. If you give up the process of bhakti, then you cannot make progress. But even with Seva Parad, it doesn't happen. And Krishna will, if we stay engaged, Krishna will forgive us and he'll allow us to continue. But Vaishnava Parad, yes. If we commit Vaishnava Parad, then what happens is not that we don't make any progress. We actually lose our ability to continue on the path of bhakti. That's the problem. So then there's no question of automatically achieving success. The minimum requirement is we have to keep at it. Right? But if you commit Vaishnava Prad, you lose that ability to keep at it because of that offense. So then it's yes.
Yes, we might have to come back if we only get as far as, let's say, Bhajan Kirtan. And that sounds like it contradicts what you were saying earlier that, you know, well, if we only make it 25%, then we still make it.
Yeah, but that's up to Krishna, right? How we make it, or how, in what way he allows us to make it. In other words, from Krishna's perspective, if you make it now or you make it 10 years later in another body, it's the same thing, right? From Krishna's perspective, he's going to guarantee we're going to get there, right? But the speed at which we want to get there, that is up to us. You see, that is up to us. But see, the point is, Krishna will guarantee our end, our goal. We may have to come back in another lifetime, and Prabhupada says this specifically, that if it is, then it'll be one more only. Right? He says this specifically, that it will be only one more if we have to come back. And that will be for the purpose of training so we can actually fit in properly back to Godhead. So he promises that if we chant 16 good rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, we follow our sadhana and we stay in the association of devotees. We do devotional service in the association of devotees. In other words, we do the minimum process that he's laid out. Prabhupada gives us a 100% guarantee that we will get back to Krishna at the end of this life. The only caveat to that is that maybe it'll be one more life for training purposes. where Krishna kind of makes up, gets rid of the loose ends. And you know, that's that percentage that's left, he helps us kind of get over it quickly. It's like a crash course. You know, okay, you got to know this, you got to know this, you got to do this, get this point. So that we're ready to go back to God. And when we arrive there, we actually know what to do, our seva. But this lifetime, Prabhupada guarantees our success. Right? He guarantees.
So it's only if you don't, like, do the minimum sadhana that you might have to take several more years.
Yeah. With the sadhana, the process that Prabhupada gives us, he gives us a full guarantee. Now, I mean, admittedly speaking, that's not easy to do. To maintain 16 good rounds of the Mahamantra every day, to stay consistently engaged in devotional service, that's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, it's not like it's easy. I mean, it's not like we don't have to put in anything. This is where that point of determination comes in. It'll take our full determination, our full endeavor, but then the result is guaranteed also. So it goes both ways. Nilamari Prabhu.
So, in terms of this theme, is education, determination, devotion, in terms of applying to an individual, but here, as a community, taking on this new project, we have that challenge, if you like, where it seems more than individually we need to be determined and so forth, but as a community,
yeah.
How do we, as a community, develop that spirit such that we can all really get behind that?
Yeah. That's a nice question. You see, whereas determination individually may be exhibited in the form of dedication or consistency in one's sadhana, in one's daily practice, in one's devotional service, one's puja, etc. Determination as a community is exhibited through our ability to cooperate, to work together towards a particular goal. That's the symptom of determination as a community. And as I was mentioning earlier, showing that determination as a community is not just a nice thing to do, it's actually essential, it's actually required for the process of bhakti. In other words, sometimes people feel, you know, I don't get along with such and such person, I don't get along with this group of people, or I don't like this, so forget it. I'll just check out and I'll do my own bhakti. Right? That actually is not possible. Right? It's not possible. We cannot do bhakti like that. Devotional service is a process which requires us, as devotees, we're required to go back and to work within community. You see, this is the thing about bhakti. This is what gives it its incredible success, is that we're asked to be in the middle of that crowd at Kumbh Mela. This is the requirement. A jnani, it doesn't have to. If the jnani doesn't like the world or doesn't like the people surrounding him, he can go off to the Himalayas and never see anyone ever again. I once saw this t-shirt someone was wearing. It. He said, the more people I meet, the more I like my dog. Right? We can take that attitude if you're a jnani or a karmi. I can't stand anyone. It's my world, my thing. I'm going to just do my job, right? Bus. But as a devotee, we're not allowed to take that attitude. We have a requirement to work in community. And if it's not working out, to make it work out. This is how Krishna helps us become purified. This is the process of anartha nivritti. It's like an example of having rocks in a bag. You know, if you've got a bunch of sharp rocks in a bag, the rocks will jab each other and poke each other and so on. And as a result of that process, eventually they'll all become smooth. So that's how... this is exactly what a temple is. Right? A temple is a bag. It's like that. And all of us, we're these sharp rocks. We've got all these sharp edges. Now, we all do. If we're honest, we've got sharp edges. And if someone gets us in the wrong way, oh, they get poked pretty bad. Right? And our goal is, it's okay. You tolerate my pokes, I'll tolerate your pokes. But we have to stay in the bag. Right? Stay in the bag and do the work together. And in the end, we'll come out smooth. We'll come out nice and smooth. So the point is, determination as a community is demonstrated by our ability to cooperate. And this Prabhupada also says very clearly. And he says, your love for me will be shown by the extent to which you cooperate together in service of this mission. So this, I mean, something like this is a wonderful opportunity to express this dedication, devotion, determination. Not just individually, it'll require both individual dedication, because we'll make our individual contribution to it, and it'll require communal dedication. That yes, I'm going to get together with everyone, and I'm going to set my priorities a little bit back so that the priorities of the community can be set forward. So it's a nice point, this thing of dedication, determination. It works at both levels. Yes, individually, but also as a community, cooperatively, together. And we see this, in fact, most nicely in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, and if you read it in terms of our own experience in ISKCON today, it's such a wonderful model, such a wonderful example. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, all the different associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all had their own different personalities. It's not like everyone was kind of out of the same mold, you know, so to speak, so they all got along very well together. Jagadananda Pandit had his own personality. Shivananda Sen had his own personality. There was one devotee who was terrible at managing his own finances. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assigned another devotee, say, you look after his money. His finances, because this guy doesn't have any financial sense. So, okay, Prabhu, I'll do that. There was one devotee who was not working out very well in Jagannath Puri. So Prabhupada's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you go to Navadvip, because they need a preacher like you there. You go there. Someone had strength in terms of singing. Someone had strength in terms of organizing. Shivananda Sen was the best organizer in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Right? Vasudev Ghosh, beautiful singer. Someone was an excellent cook. Someone who was a sannyasi. They all were there. And everyone had their own personalities. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's really wonderful. Different personalities, different natures. Some are a little very fiery in nature. Some get upset very easily. Jagadananda Pandit once brings this big thing of oil, scented oil, right? Very valuable. You know, in India, to get essential oil is so expensive. And he brings a big matki full of it. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, you know, I can't really take this because I'm a sannyasi. I can't massage my body with scented oils. So why don't you give it to Lord Jagannath? He gets so upset, he smashes the whole thing there. Right? So it's naturally more of an impetuous character. Right? We know in our own communities that some people are a little fiery, impetuous in nature. But he was very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Others, very submissive, very Gadadhar Pandit, for example. I mean, he wouldn't say anything. Even if he was hurt, he just keep it inside. And you know, we know people like that also, right? Something hurts them, and they just keep it inside. Something's wrong. Everything okay? Yeah, I'm okay. You sure everything? Well, I'm okay. Right? And finally, then 6 months later, it comes out. Oh, that was the problem. Why didn't you say something to me? Right? So there's different natures. Of course, all of these are pure devotees. But the point being is that even in a community of non-pure devotees, right, the point is that there's room for everyone in Krishna's world. And in fact, not just room, but Krishna needs them. Krishna needs the sentimental, teary-eyed types. Right? Krishna needs the strong, heavy, you know, kind of that types. Krishna needs the very artistic types. Krishna needs the very mechanical and logical and rational types. Everyone is necessary. We just have to figure out a way of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. That's all. Because there's some way in which we all fit. Right? You look at Chaitanya Charitamrita, that they all fit together. So we just have to, the common element was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they all fit together somehow around them. So here we have Gornitai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here, he's the common element, he's the center point. And we all fit, we've all got our place, we just got to find it. And we have to be a little bit considerate to the person who's next to us. In case the fit isn't just perfect. It's not right. Sometimes it can feel like jamming a square thing through a round hole, you know? It can feel like that. But that's okay. It's the material world and we're all still, you know, getting through an arthanivritti. So it takes some time. Shall we conclude there? There's one more question. One person had their hand up, maybe? Okay. This will be the last. Yes, Prabhu.
So my question is that when Guru Vasudeva went to Krishna,
was your friend and my devotee, so you must go to there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that the Lord cannot forgive, or he doesn't want to forgive, because he's all powerful. So is that one thing that he cannot do, where forgive a person who's offended a Vaishnava, or he chooses not to do that himself?
Either way, it doesn't matter. In that, whether Krishna can do it and he chooses not to do it, or he can do it but he if he can do it but he chooses not to do it, or he cannot do it, right? In the end, the result is the same for us. In other words, we don't get our forgiveness until we go to the devotee. Now, in terms of whether Krishna is all powerful or not, you see, Krishna can do anything. But the point is, how can you forgive on someone else's behalf? And that's a logical contradiction, right? It means sometimes people say, oh, Krishna is all powerful. So can he lift a stone that's, can he create a stone that's too heavy for him to lift? Can he do that? He's all powerful. Can he lift a stone that's too heavy for him to lift? How? Well, then it wasn't too heavy for him to lift. Right? But I asked you for a stone that was too heavy for him to lift. So beforehand he wasn't all powerful, then he became all powerful. Is that what you're saying? I mean, the point is, Krishna is not required to... my point is that Krishna is not required to live up to logical contradictions. In other words, when we ask Krishna to create a stone that's heavier than he can lift, right, we're creating a logical contradiction. We're saying, can Krishna be all-powerful and still not be all-powerful? That's what we're asking, basically. Right? So to ask Krishna to forgive for someone else, that's a logical contradiction. You see, like, forgiveness by definition means coming from the person who is wronged. That's the definition of forgiveness. You see? So what does it mean to forgive on someone else's behalf? It's just like if someone comes and punches you, right? And then I say, it's okay, I forgive you. Is that forgiveness? I can call it forgiveness, but it's not forgiveness. Okay? So to ask Krishna to forgive the offense of the devotee is like asking him to do that. Sure, he can come around and say, I forgive you. But what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. Krishna's not satisfied. The devotee is not satisfied. You're not satisfied.
Who I don't have account of. So when time comes and even body and Krishna is there, or if he even, you know, sees where I've done, I don't know who all to go to.
Right. They'll all be standing in a line just before you enter Vaikuntha. And you'll get a chance to say sorry to every single one of them. Krishna will give us the opportunity, right? It'll happen. He'll purify our hearts. He'll give us an opportunity. Devotees, they also don't take grudges, right? Keep grudges. This is the saving grace. That although it is required that we beg for forgiveness, but it is also the nature of the devotee whom we're asking for forgiveness, that it's probably the case that they've even forgotten about the offense before we ask for forgiveness. Right? That's the nature of a devotee, is very, very compassionate. So the point is that devotees, we may have offended in the past also, but they'll be ready to forgive. They'll be eager. Sometimes, also offenses can be different based on our level of knowledge. Sometimes we may commit offenses without knowing so much. Other times we may commit offenses in full knowledge with the intent to hurt someone else. So there's different degrees of it as well. That opportunity, Krishna will give us that opportunity to redeem ourselves of our various offenses. That all will be taken care of. Our main focus has to be from this point onward, right? From now onward. The past will take care of itself.
What about offending a non-devotee? For example, someone says, before I came to Krishna consciousness, I was a businessman, and I cheated many people. I heard that they are no longer in communication. I came and asked for forgiveness. I feel guilty, I'm repenting, but I offended them. Now, it's not a devotee,
you get bad karma for it. Right? You get bad karma. And often a devotee will experience that bad karma just because, not to the extent that you would normally, but Krishna still wants to make sure that you're purified of whatever sinful activities you performed. Right? So he'll give us that experience of our bad karma. This is what that verse was saying. This atma kritam vipakam. This word vipaka is very nice. It means cooked. We have to get cooked fully before we can go back to Godhead, you know. So he'll cook us. Krishna will cook us. And sometimes that cooking can be a little painful. Right? But we have to get all that out of our system. And so we'll get that karma for it. But in a measured way. Krishna will give it in such a way that it helps us on our path of bhakti. It helps us surrender, bring us closer to him. So thank you all very much for your attention and your attendance and for giving me this opportunity. And maybe see you in 1 hour. Hare Krishna.